Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Dave Morgan. Dave began his music career as a very, very young child, singing harmony with his parents. In school, he chose the drums to play and later picked up the vibraphones. And so now, when you see Dave on stage, you may see him playing the drums, playing the vibes, or singing, or doing any two of them at the same time. He began his professional musical career at 13 when his father's band needed a drummer for a New Year's Eve gig. It's a delightful story. He's a very gentle, self-deprecating, talented musician with a very sweet story to tell. So hang on. Here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. I know that this seems an oxymoron. I know that it seems to many that it's not possible to be somebody that you aren't. That how can you be somebody that you aren't? You must be somebody that you really are. But in fact, I believe that whenever you reflect on it, whenever you ask yourself, whenever you observe other people, you can see, as I do in my private practice as a psychotherapist, that most people are not being who they really are. Most people are pretending to be somebody they're not. You know the people who, no matter when you say, "How are you?" to them, they say, "Fantastic." Well, how is it possible for anyone to always be fantastic? So what does it mean when someone always says they're fantastic? Either they're not telling you the truth, or they're not in touch with themselves. And so, or they believe that fantastic is the way they need to be, or they feel like they mustn't burden you with anything that might be wrong, or They've got that thing about airing dirty laundry in public. But whatever it is, they're not being who they really are at that moment. There's a flip side of that to people who, whenever you ask them how they are, they have a dreadful story to tell you. The car broke down, and I got an unexpected bill, and my girlfriend left me, and the dog ate my homework. And, you know, this too is a terrible exaggeration. These people also sometimes have nice things happen, but they rarely present with that. They rarely share that with you. So what is this when people are only telling you one side of the story? Well, I believe what that is that they learned early in their life that the other side of the story was not okay. It was either not okay to be sad or depressed or anxious or angry, and so in family of origin, they needed to be fantastic all the time. Or people were jealous or angry or hurt or something if they were great and happy and joyous, so they had to keep showing that they weren't. But what it means in the end is that there's some way in which they are not able to present precisely who they are. And as a therapist, I have discovered over and over again that quite often what happens is people forget who they really are. They believe what I call their cover story and don't have access to the rest of themselves. So if you are consciously presenting someone you aren't really, or if you think that you were cheated out of a part of yourself in childhood, The Lynn Show is about saying that can happen, that may have happened to you, and perhaps helping you see that that happened to you, and to say that it is possible to reclaim those things which you have had to deny or bury, either consciously or unconsciously. And that I believe that a life which is fully lived with all of who you are is a more satisfying, comfortable, happy life. If you want to know more about that, you can go up on my website, thelynshow.com. That's thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynshow.com. Up there, you can click on Email Me, ask me any questions that you have. I'd be happy to hear from you. You can get me to talk to your group or organization. You can get my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, in which I talk about why it can be so difficult to change and obviously what you can do about it. You can also hear all of the interviews that I have ever done, including the one I'm going to air today with Dave Morgan. And I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And Dave is no exception to this rule. He is who he really is and has been since infancy. So I'm going to play Dave's interview, but I'm also going to play two cuts from his CD, where you can hear him playing the drums, playing the vibes, and singing. So here now is Dave Morgan from his CD, 3D in Blue, which features Jeff Lashway and Jamie Owsley. And here they are playing I Just Found Out About Love and I Like It.
I just found out about love and I like it. I like it. I like what love has been doing to me. I hold you close in my arms and I like it. I like it. Oh, what a wonderful future I see. It's a one-time only. It's a lifetime deal. And I know it's real.
I can tell by the way that I feel. Right now, I'm living it up and I like it, I like it. Hey, you, give me a clue. What's love doing to you? Looks like you could be liking it too.
I'm here with Dave Morgan, the multi-talented musician who's rolling his eyes, so also the self-deprecating multi-talented musician, right? Vibraphonist, drummer, vocalist.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan, which is why I'm interviewing him. I want to talk about your work, but I want to tell you, I interview people who make their living or their life within art. Mm-hmm. It's very clear that you make your living and your life with the art of music.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. So I only ask one question, and it is, do you remember the very first moment in your life that you were drawn to music, that you found yourself humming or singing, or you were drawn to a piano, or people said, I don't know, you're very musical. Any of that, do you remember?
I remember all of it because, you know, I grew up in a family of professional musicians.
Who did what?
My mother and father both played guitar and bass and sang.
Wow.
And they started out in country music. And they met in a radio station in 1949.
Wow.
And they were in different groups. So I'm told that I was carried around in a guitar case while they were on stage. I would lay in the guitar case as a baby. I have very vivid memories of square dances on circles in cities, small towns in Indiana where I grew up. And I would be standing on a statue or crawling up on a statue in the center of a town and watching square dancers going all around me. But the very first time I knew I wanted to be a musician was after my first job.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
You're ahead of yourself here.
Okay.
So essentially what you're saying is that you were surrounded by
music
in your childhood.
The whole time. Yeah. We would sing in the car. You know, traveling.
Mm-hmm. I interviewed a concert pianist in you know, she's from Russia, and they had, I think, a two-room place to live in, and so her cradle was under the piano.
Oh, yeah. Very much like the way I
exactly,
grew.
Exactly.
Very much.
Right. So, did you start to hum, to want to play something? Did they say you have to have lessons?
No, they said sing a third part.
Yes.
My mother was a better, she could hear harmony better than my dad. And my dad always wanted to be a lead singer in a country group anyway. So he wanted to sing the melody.
Right.
So my mom would always sing a harmony, and then they'd look at me and say, okay, sing a third part. And, you know, that's just the way I grew up.
So, did they show you the third part, or you had to find it?
I had to find it.
Really?
Yeah, find it. Sometimes she would say, get this note, you know.
And how old are you when you're doing this?
Oh, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know.
Oh, my God, what a training.
And it was fun. It was always fun.
Yeah, it was always fun, and you were always a part of the
And my tribe. Brother, when my brother came along, it was the same thing, find a part.
Really? You had to find a fourth?
Yes.
Really? Oh, my God. So, is he a musician?
He's a very good musician, not professionally anymore. He became because of the work that he did in music and study, and you know how it gives you discipline. He is now a ninth degree black belt in Okinawan style karate.
Oh my God.
And has his own dojo for probably the last 25 or 30 years.
Wow. Wow.
But he is a bassist, a trumpet player, and a vocalist.
So you're all pretty multi
We all learned,
right?
Yeah, my dad played guitar early on, then he went to upright bass when he got tired of playing country music and he wanted to play standards and he got into the other genres of music, and then eventually went back to playing guitar.
So are you saying that when you came along, not only did you have to find the third, but you had to be the drummer? They needed a drummer?
They let me choose. That happened in school when I was 8.
Okay, and, so before then, before then,
it was just singing.
Just singing.
Right.
Then you're in school and it's time to take an instrument. Everybody is taking an instrument.
Right.
And so they said you could choose, and what did you choose?
I chose the drum.
Yes.
You know, I liked it, and the first thing my dad said was, well, that's good. He says, you'll always work.
That's very cute. Okay, so you chose the drums. So the drums were your first instrument.
Yes.
Yeah. I was thinking when I was watching you play the vibes that they're both percussion.
Absolutely.
Right. It's all about
Absolutely.
The banging.
It's all about the beating.
Yeah, the beating. Right. It's all right. Well, it's all about time, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you begin to study the drums when you're in, I don't know, sixth.
I was in the. I was eight, so that would have made me in the fourth grade.
Fourth grade. All right, right, yeah.
Fifth grade.
Okay, so you start to play
that.
The drums, and you
third
take
grade.
You take to it. You like it. You're
yeah, I liked it. At first it was kind of tough, and my school music teacher was a professional musician, and he knew my dad. So, and I got lessons during the summer, and mostly reading lessons, and not so much how to hold the sticks or technique, but mostly reading and education and
reading
music,
reading
percussion.
Music. Reading percussion, not reading music, but reading percussion.
Well, notes.
Notes,
but they're
right.
All on the same line.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But the times are the time signatures.
Time signatures,
right? Yeah.
and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. So, it's interesting to me that your experience up until then is all melody, but you didn't choose a melody instrument. I mean, all that singing is
right.
It's all melody.
I really don't know why I did. That,
no, well, we rarely know why, but that
I was
it
attracted to the drum. I really was. I thought it was a neat looking instrument,
and it was fun to play.
Well, there was another gentleman. You know, of course, there were musicians in our house all the time.
Yes.
When I was a kid.
Right.
And one of my dad's very best friends was a drummer.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that might have had a little bit to do with it.
Did
now
you,
that I think about it.
Now that's kind of interesting. Is that because you liked him, or because?
Well, you have to remember that, you know, I would wake up on Saturday mornings in my house, and I would have to walk over bodies in the living room that were musicians sleeping over because they had played. You know, they were all from out of town, or we always had people staying at our house.
Wow.
Musicians. So. Mostly country musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know. One of those guys was Joe Edwards. He was the violinist on the Grand Ole Opry for 30 years.
My God.
And, you know, that's the kind of people
that would come to your house and
hang out
and fall asleep.
Yeah, right. They were just around, and drummers were around, and guitar players, and steel guitar players, and fiddle players, and...
Well, it's hard to imagine that you would have thought of doing anything else given that. I mean, pretty much everybody you knew was a musician.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Some great people, too. I mean, some really, I think of them often.
Really? You're talking about the kind of people they were, not only the kinds of musicians they were.
That's right.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So, and that's the other thing, I think, that to be, you know, actors quite often say that when they found themselves finally in school someplace in the company of other actors, that the sensation of being in that group, of that community, was so powerful. But it sounds to me like you had that from day one with musicians.
Well, yeah, but their humor. You know, their humor, their fun, their jokes, and musicians are famous for telling jokes.
Yes.
You know. And there was a guy named Jimmy Fortoffer. He was a clarinet player. My mother worked with him quite a bit, and Jimmy's wife, Betty. She played guitar, and my mom played bass, and they had a little trio together. And Jimmy was a short little guy, but he was a, you know how short guys can have big egos, and he would always talk about he beat up this guy, knocked him out of his shoes, and he was 6'4", he taught me how to box.
Really?
You know, then another, the drummer that I was speaking of earlier that my dad was good friends with, you know, he taught me how to, took me sailing.
Wow.
You know, it was not just the music, but it was just the fellowship.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
We were all close. And when you play in a band, it's kind of like a family, you know, and the kids, they come with that too. I knew a lot of kids my own age that were, you know.
And so did they play as well?
That didn't always happen.
Right,
it didn't always happen.
But it happened for you.
It happened for me.
Okay, so eight, you start the drums, and you're kind of inundated. I mean, in the summer, you're learning to read, and then you're playing, and that just goes on. Did you start to play in a band? Did you play in the school band?
Well, yeah, I played in the school band, just in the percussion section, and one day, we were in the urban. We were in the what do they call the? I guess it was the suburbs of Indianapolis. And one day comes this hotshot kid from Indianapolis, a city school, Shortridge High School, which was a very, very well-known school. And anyway, he had been trained. He had studied, you know, his technique. He knew all of his rudiments. He could read well. He was a singer in a church choir in downtown Indianapolis on the Circle. He had already learned to sing Latin. You know, this kid had some chops, and he was a real inspiration. And we became real good friends. And so he was in, you know, there were other kids, too, that were inspiration to me. But that was long about 13 or 14 years old. And then I loved sports, and I was playing basketball my freshman year in high school and actually made the first cut and made the first string. And that was in the fall. Mm-hmm. And my birthday's in October. My dad bought me a drum set in October. So that nixed the basketball.
I was just going to say, didn't buy a basketball.
Didn't buy a basketball. So I went with that's when I kind of made a choice.
And 13.
And I started practicing at home and playing with Oscar Peterson records.
Uh-huh.
We had a second bedroom. It was like an office. And so my mom would let me play there in the summers for 2 or 3 hours. But by 3 p.m, I had to be done.
Well, now this is kind of interesting to me because you said that your parents, at least for some period of time, were playing country music, and a lot of the other band members, the other musicians, were country players.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar Peterson is not a country music.
Well, but what happened by the time I was 13, my dad was also changing to different kinds of music. He didn't want to play country anymore. He was tired of it. He started studying upright bass with a very good bassist in Indianapolis. And so he was buying Oscar Peterson records and learning how to play standards. And, you know, I mean, his idol was Cowboy Copas, okay?
I don't know who that is.
Well, he was a country music star in the 40s and the 50s. But as my dad went along, and his, you know, my dad was not just a very good musician who played in different genres, but he was a student of music. And that was another thing I learned. Watching him, he played guitar pretty well, and then he says, I'm going to play upright bass, and he went and got a teacher, and he started studying. And I would go to the lessons with him, you know. So pretty soon he was playing in a different community of musicians. And that's when I started feeling like that's kind of where I wanted to go, because I was drawn to that kind of music, you know, standards and swing music and jazz and mainstream jazz. And so I was off and running with that. He had the records. I was playing them, and I started practicing with them.
Okay, so you're still quite young, you know, 13, 14, 15. This is what's going on, right?
Right.
So, you said earlier, when I stopped you, that it was your first gig that made you choose to be a musician?
Yeah.
So how did you get your first gig?
Well, my dad.
Yeah?
You know, of course. He was playing in a trio in Indianapolis. It's a pretty simple town. There's an east and west street goes through, and there's a north and south that goes through downtown Indianapolis. Well, the north and south street... on the north side of Indianapolis, from about, I would say, 16th Street all the way to 30th Street North, was a strip of nightclubs and restaurants. And he was playing in one of those, and the drummer that he was working with for about 2 years decided that he was going to get out of the music business at 22 years old.
Oh, my.
And become a car salesman. And
make sell, a little money.
Make a little money with VWs. And he did make a lot of money. But anyway, they needed a drummer, and it was New Year's Eve. And so I ended up playing 3 shows in a place called the Italian Village, and it had a lounge. It was a big old house, and on the right side as you walked in was a lounge that seated about 60 people in a bar. And on the other side was the rest of the restaurant. And so I played in there, organ, bass, and drums, and I We did three shows. We had two comedians and three vocalists.
Wow.
And we did three shows.
And how old were you?
I was 13.
Oh, my God.
And that was on New Year's Eve.
And you said, this is it.
After I, yeah, I said, wow, this is, and I made money, too. You know, I mean, the club, my dad said, okay, after the gig, go upstairs. It's dark up there, but going up there, you know, I wasn't supposed to be in a nightclub.
Yeah, you were way underage.
I was way underage. Right. But I had real dark glasses on, and I had my hair slicked back, and I had a lot more hair than black, and a suit and a tie, and they would shuffle me off into the kitchen on breaks.
Right.
Two guys between me, you know, taking me to the kitchen. But ABC never caught us, and I worked that job for weekends for, I don't know, maybe a year.
Oh, my.
And so, yeah, I got a real education.
Yes.
In the...
And you said, this. I want to do this.
Oh, yeah, I knew the first night. I said, this is it, you know, for me. I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it. And, you know, I've worked with guys 20 years or 30 years older than me all
yes,
the time.
Yes, right.
I worked with all the old, I was playing with all the old cats.
From the beginning?
Yeah.
From the beginning, when you were 13.
Right.
Right.
And getting the lectures on drugs in the kitchen.
Really?
Don't do this. Stay away from this. Stay away from him. Stay away from him.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's so cute.
The first night, that New Year's Eve, there was a gal, she was a waitress, and she had this cleavage. And she had these really big hands, but she had this cleavage, and of course, here comes midnight.
Right.
You know, it all the queen.
That's right, right,
we're all
right,
singing,
right.
And she comes up to me, and she takes my head and puts it right into her chest. It says, Happy New Year, Dave! My first night.
No wonder you chose that career.
And then the singer, who was I was told was a gigolo and gay, comes up to me and gives me a big smooch on the lips and says, you're doing a great job, babe. Mwah, mwah, mwah. That was my first night.
That's hilarious.
It was funny.
Yes, but it was wonderful.
You don't think about these things until...
Well,
years later.
No, you're living through them. So what did you do from there? I mean, you're 13. You can't, except to play with your dad, you really can't go out and gig. So
no.
So what did
once
you do?
Once I started driving, I could gig.
Yeah.
And my mom, I went on jobs with my mom, too.
That's amazing.
And then, of course, as I told you, my band director in high school, who was my first music teacher, was a professional pianist and saxophonist. So I think it was my sophomore year of high school during the summer, before I was going to be a sophomore, I went to work with my piano teacher, my music teacher, at the Columbia Club downtown in Indianapolis on the Circle.
So you're essentially a professional musician as a teenager.
I worked six nights a week my last 2 years of high school.
You are definitely a professional musician as a teenager.
Right.
That's amazing. Okay, so now you're a drummer, and did you go on to college? Did you do any more training? You said, I got it. I don't need any of this.
No, I knew that I needed college. I knew that I needed, because here's what happens. When you play six nights a week and you're performing, you know what you can do and what you can't do. And it became very self-evident. There was a lot that I wanted to do that I couldn't
do. Like what?
Well, just the physical ability.
As a drummer?
Yes. Just knowing how to move your hands. The stickings, the control.
You needed more training. You needed
technique.
Yeah,
the more you do something, the more you realize. And especially if you're listening to other drummers.
And you see what can be done.
And you see what can be done, and you know what you're not doing. So I was a foolish young kid. I got married when I was 17 years old.
Ah, yes, right.
And So I really couldn't afford to go to college because I didn't have any children or anything. I just got married. And so what I did was I decided that, well, I'm playing six nights a week. I'm going to study with somebody. And one of my good friends who now is with Rufus Reed's trio, jazz trio, his name is Steve Ali. Great musician. He said, Dave, he says, I'm going to Indiana University this year. He says, the head of the percussion department down there is a guy named George Gaber, and you ought to go talk to him. You know, if you want to study, maybe you can study with him. So I thought, well, you know, my income went from, in 1968, it went from $150 a week to 1972, $500 a week.
Wow.
And I was playing in a trio with my dad and a piano player, Lenny Wilson, and that group took off in Indianapolis. We were one of the big groups that everybody came to see. Our income tripled. So I had lots of money in those days. And so I went down to see George, and I went in, and I said, he says, what can I do for you? And I said, well, I want to learn to play music. He says, well, you don't have to go to college to do that.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, but I need to study. And he says, well, I only take percussion students. That meaning I only take students that are going to become percussionists in a symphony setting.
Oh.
That play every kind of percussion, not just drum set. And so it really knocked the wind out of me. I didn't, you know, he said, I don't teach just anybody anything, you know. And so I went home and I sat around and played solitaire for about a year. I was 18 and worked at night, and I was really unhappy. I didn't know what to do with myself. And so finally I decided to go back to George and lie. So I said, George, I said, I want to be a percussionist.
That's right.
And it was the best decision I ever made, because now I can play the vibraphone.
Yeah.
And it's all because of George.
I was getting there. So tell me how that happened.
Well, you know, he took me on, and I studied with him for about 3.5 years privately, once a week.
Studying drums?
Well, the first 6 weeks was just about how to move my sticks. He got me into some books. There were some wonderful books that I, you know, Ways to Move My Hands, a book called Stick Control by George Stone. It's a wonderful book. And it changed my life, too. But and then after the first 6 weeks, no more drumsticks. And we went immediately to the mallets.
Wow.
And marimba. And I started practicing scales and, you know, arpeggios and all of that. And did all that with him. And I finally got to the, you know, after, I couldn't apply what I was learning with George anywhere because I was playing every night in a band.
And you weren't playing the kind of music that called for the stuff you were learning.
Right. And that's interesting, too, because here I am in a professional group. These guys have been in the business all their lives, Lenny, particularly the pianist. And one night I came into work, I said, well, you know, someday I'm going to play in a really professional
set. Oh, no, you didn't.
He said, really? Well, he says, hey, man, this is it.
Right.
You're doing
you're
it.
There,
you
right.
know, you're there. You know.
Right.
I didn't see it that way because I, you know, my musical experiences were pretty limited at that point.
mm-hmm.
So, and then I finally couldn't bear to tell George that I was going to quit. So I didn't go back. And a couple of months later, he called me. Well, George, or Dave, what's going on? I said, man, I can't do it anymore. I just have no place to apply the mallets or anything that I'm studying. And so he understood, and that man wrote me letters, postcards. He always wanted to know how I was, what I was doing.
Wow.
He even heard me play a few times later in life. So he was very important to me, and anything I did in his office was never right. I mean, he was a taskmaster, and so that was frustrating, but as the years have gone by, I see now that he made me reach for more than I had in my pocket.
Yeah. Okay, so how did the vibraphone happen?
Well, I was playing, you know, I had a marimba, and you know, in the music business, when things go bad, they really go south. I had to sell some things, so I sold my beautiful Deegan 4-octave marimba. I sold a few other things too.
I sold a. I'm so sorry.
I know what you're gonna say.
It was one of the original Yamaha electric pianos. Uh-huh. You know, to pay the rent.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, I couldn't. I didn't know what else. I didn't have anything else to sell.
Yeah.
It broke my heart.
Yeah. Well, it's you know. I'll never sell another instrument.
No, of course not.
Again, you know, because I've always regretted it.
Mm-hmm.
But so the vibraphone happened essentially because you, in the mid-80s, Mothers Against Drunk Driving changed the way people thought about drinking in out. And so... bands that were six nights a week and Holiday Inns with lounges and restaurants became a thing of the past.
Yeah. And cigarettes was going to really put the kibosh on that later.
Right, you know, right.
Right.
And so that's what, you know, since that happened, I was doing a lot more freelancing, and I was still staying busy, but I thought to myself, you know, I need something else. I need something extra here, because this is not going to, I don't know, you know, everything I can do, I need to do. And that's when I started getting really serious about the vibraphone. And I never studied vibraphone.
You're kidding.
Well, I hadn't at that point.
Oh.
And so that's when I bought a vibraphone. I started studying.
You know, I want to say this. I watch you play. You have to tell me if this is accurate or not, but what it looks like to me is that you hover over the instrument until the very last minute, and it looks like you're composing on the spot. like you're not playing licks that you always play, that it's not some kind of...
I wish I could say that was true.
Oh, my God. Well, that's what it looks like.
Well, you know, I want that. That's what I want, because spontaneity is really important.
So you're not hitting the thing until the very last minute. That's what it looks like.
Well, sometimes it's true. And, you know, I have my licks. You know,
yeah.
I have my, mm-hmm. I have things I like to play,
mm-hmm.
and I play them over and over. You know, and jazz is a very good musician that was with Henry Mancini for 25 years told me, he says, improvisation is just the stuff that you've learned to play.
Yeah, right.
But hopefully, in the middle of all that stuff that you know how to play, you will play it in a way that you never played it before.
Right, right. You'll hear something.
And then it'll become music.
Right, right. Well, and then it'll become some another thing you have, too.
Right,
right.
Well, that's, well, you know, if you remember it.
Yeah. So, I do want to take this opportunity to say that it's wonderful to hear you play.
Thank you very much
you
for
know?
That.
And it's also wonderful to sing in front of you. I mean, to hear you behind. It's great.
Well, thank you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. And that brings up when did you start to sing? Well, I mean, apparently you were singing when you were, you know, five, but when did you start to make that part of your...
Well, that happened early, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that, when I was with my dad in that first trio,
mm-hmm.
That became very successful in the late 60s, early 70s, one night, my dad went on vacation, and I decided not to go. It was summertime, and I think I was in the summer before my senior year of high school. And I decided I was going to stay and work. So we hired another bass player. And the bass player's up there, and Lenny's gone. The piano player says, Dave, he says, you know, your dad's not here. We got nobody to sing.
Oh, your dad was the singer.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
As well as the bass player. And I said, well, you know, I sing. And so that's how it started. And the bass player, who I dearly love, Eugene Folks, he says, what do you sing? And I said, well, how about Shadow of Your Smile? And Lenny says, what key? And I said, I don't know. And Gene, the bass player, looked at him and says, I bet he sings it in his daddy's key. And I never heard the end of it. It was always singing. I was always singing in daddy's key.
So are you still?
Yeah, and, you know, also my dad, you know, a couple of times looked over me and say, sing a part, you know, and I'd be playing the drums and he'd say, sing something. And so that's kind of how the singing thing got started for me and drumming at the same time. And I've just kept it up over the years. And, you know, we in the trio we had, we all three sang together. And so that's how it started. And I just kept it going. And over the years, you know, some of the groups I had, I sang in. And then, of course, other groups I didn't do any singing at all, just play drums. And then sometimes I love to sing and play the vibes. And that's what I really, that's my biggest challenge these days.
To sing and play at the same time?
Right, yeah, to accompany myself.
Yeah, and it's a challenge because?
Well, you know, it's hard.
Yes, that's what I thought you meant. Right.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. I mean, doing, and, you know, the thing about learning to play the vibes, too, you know, when you're young and you take up an instrument, you have no fear.
Yeah.
But when you're 42 or 43 and you already know what it's supposed to sound like, taking up a new instrument is very scary.
So are you saying that's when you started?
Well, that's, you know, when I was in my 40s, that's when I started taking the vibraphone seriously.
Oh.
I've only been doing that about 30 years.
Wow.
You know.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And wow.
So I knew it would take me, I told my brother, you know, I said, I'm going to play this instrument, but I think it's going to take me about 20 years to learn to play it well.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I'm still learning. You know, but and it has. It's taken a long time. It does take a long time. But and I think and there's a, you know, getting rid of the fear and not being afraid to do
hit the wrong note.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
One of my a great musician told me, he says, just when in doubt, play a G. It goes with everything.
Like a black dress.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, and of course, there's the old jazz joke, you know, that if you hit the wrong note, you just keep hitting it and hitting it, and people think that's what...
Yeah, they are repeated right, over and
that's
over.
That's right. You know, they'll think
it's a lick.
It's a lick, right. Right. You didn't hear, you never heard this lick?
Right.
Okay, so where do you live now?
Well, I'm kind of a gypsy. we have been in Virginia for the last 18 years on the Blue Ridge Parkway at mile marker 99 in a little town called Fancy Gap.
Really?
And my wife has a house up there. We doubled the size of it 18 years ago and moved there. And I created a business in about three states there. And, of course, we always have come to Florida in the winter, usually 2 months a year. We have some timeshares and so on and so forth. So, but that has been over the years now. In the last few years, I keep staying here longer and longer because I'm working here.
What a shame.
More and more. And so it's great for us. We're staying this year 7 months.
Wow.
So,
well, we're really happy to have you. I mean,
well, it's good to be here. Yeah. And, you know, we've had to work on the housing, but we're getting that straightened out too. So we've lived.
Well, you were saying
places.
You have timeshares. Well, you can only stay in a timeshare
for so long.
Yeah, right. Like, so you have to keep. You're not kidding about being a gypsy.
We're moving around a lot. You know, our mortgage is going to be up in a couple of years, and so I don't want to sell our place up there because I love it so much. But I do want to work here.
You know, yeah.
There's more work here now.
If you could only do one of these, play the drums or the vibes or sing, what would it be?
Oh, that's a very tough question.
I know. I mean, if you can't
really
answer it, it's okay.
I think that I'm going to do them all as long as I can. And, you know, if I can't carry the vibraphone anymore, and if I can't carry the drums anymore...
You can still sing.
I can still sing. So I'll probably be doing that all, you know.
Well, and again... When I watch you sing, it seems to me I am watching someone who really loves what he's doing. Okay, I only ask one other question, and that is, having spent a life, and you have spent your entire life in music, what would you say about what that's like?
Well, I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
See, now this is, talk about a paradox.
When you see young men and women who have a lot of talent, you know, it scares me. I'm scared for them.
Yes.
You know, we were at Florida International a couple of weeks ago in Miami, mm-hmm. and I have a friend there who teaches at the college there, and I saw some wonderful, wonderful young students. I'm trying to figure out where they're going to work when they get out of school.
Yeah.
But you have to encourage these people with all of this talent and trust that they will find their way. And, you know, if a mediocre guy like me can make it, I know people who have training and lots more talent than I'll ever have are going to do well.
And what about for you? What has living this life in music has been like for you?
I'll say this, that my wife of 33 years has made it. First of all, she believes in me.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes all the difference in the world, no matter what you do.
Yes.
And without her, I couldn't have done it.
Wow.
I'll say that.
Okay.
And, I mean, I would have stayed in the music business, but it's been so much easier with her support and encouragement and her caring.
Wow.
You know, yeah. I think it's really, that has been the biggest thing that's helped me stay in the music business. And I do love it a lot, you know, and I've been so fortunate. Played all my life and I raised two kids,
mm-hmm.
Playing music, and music takes you to the heights and the depths.
Yes, it does.
But it's all overall, I don't think I would have done anything else any better.
It's a great place to stop. Thank you very much, Dave Morgan.
Thank you. I appreciate that. This was fun.
We can't all be as lucky as Dave Morgan to have our earliest life experiences offering us what we would do with our life and the complete support and encouragement of our family, their friends, and then to have lucked into a wife who is completely supportive. We can't all have that, but we can all reach for who we really are. So Dave says, you know, music can take you to the heights and the depths, but this is who he is. He could not, would not, would not want to be or do anything else. So can you say that about your life? Perhaps you didn't have what Dave had, the encouragement at every step of the way that this was all right for him to do, all right for him to be. But as I said at the beginning, it's not too late to recover whatever you had to give up because you didn't get this unconditional acceptance for who you are. And it is my hope that in listening to Dave and listening to what it sounds like to be completely who you are, that you were encouraged to ask yourself if this is true of you, and if you found even the hint that it was not true of you, that you were inspired to think about what you might have lost and how you might get it back. And we're going to go out on another cut from Dave's CD, 3D in Blue. This is Dave playing the drums, as well as everything else, in a cut of East of the Sun. And as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. As I said, that you might be inspired to recover some more of yourself, or just because it was interesting and charming to listen to a delightful man who is doing what he is meant to do, or maybe it was just listening to his terrific music. So whatever it is, I hope it brings you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
East of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love, dear. Near to the sun in the day, near to the moon at night, we'll live in a lovely way, dear. Live in a lovely and pale moonlight, just you and I, forever and a day. Love will not die, we'll keep it that way. Up among the stars we'll find a harmony of life to a lovely tune. East of the sun and west of the moon, yeah, east of the sun and west of the moon.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure, I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get, I may be running out of time, but it's